When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, guys, this is a doozy of a podcast talking about the one and only resource guarding. We talk about it a lot. It comes up a lot. It's something I actually stay away from publicly putting content out about, frankly, because it's dangerous. And I feel like in this podcast, I'm able to really give these owners step by step. If you have a dog that has resource guarding issues with food and socks and other weird objects, this is a step by step process in how to overcome that exact thing. So I know this is going to be helpful for you guys if you're dealing with resource guarding, especially if you're a trainer and you're like, man, how do I explain this to my clients? This is a great place to start. And again, it's free. And I feel like I've done a really good job at about really going through with a fine-tooth comb and explaining this is why resource guarding happens. These are the genetic things that go in. These are the protocols that go in. These are the things to be safe about. Here's the step-by-step process if you want to do it right, via my experience. So I know that you guys are going to find this helpful, especially if you're dealing with resource guarding. And I can tell you right now, as I said in the last podcast, we are doing $100 off every single one of my courses. And you guys have an opportunity to save up to 50% off all my courses by using the discount code YouTube at my course website, which is tomdaviscourses.com, or by clicking the link in my profile that brings you directly to my courses. Using discount code YouTube, $100 off. Enjoy the podcast, guys. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next episode. Also, everybody, this December the 7th and 8th, 2024, I will be doing a seminar at my facility in upstate New York at the Upstate Canine Academy. I'm very excited. These are just announced. This will 100% sell out. It does every single time we do it. Working spots and weekend audit spots are available. Get your tickets in the link below. I'm so excited to do a seminar in my hometown, of course, in my own facility, and I'll see you guys this December. I guess give me the formal breakdown of what you guys are working on.
So Cody's a two-year-old, he's just over 2 years, unneutered Chesapeake. Mm-hmm. And we didn't realize this, but my husband's a hunter, and we got a breeder in North Carolina, and he took them from the mother around 4 to 6 weeks.
Four weeks for puppy kindergarten, he called
it. For puppy kindergarten.
To create a bold and independent hunting dog.
And he actually, when we got down there, he was like, look, you know, him around, he picked him up by their hind legs just to show us like how not fearful they were.
So very rough.
That was kind of red flag number one. Since we brought him home, we have also a 12-year-old Frenchton, and Cody would gobble up his food and then sprint over to our other dog, his food bowl, and try to eat his food, and they'd get into a little spat. And he didn't really ever back down. So he has resource guarding.
From day one?
Yeah, from 8 weeks old.
From the minute we brought him home.
Okay.
And that was kind of the main thing. And then we had our first baby in December. And then my husband fell out of a tree and fractured his back in May. So those were two kind of major things.
Yeah.
And so since then, we haven't been able to trust him to let anybody in the house. He's bitten both of us over guarding.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was writing down. So since 8 weeks, he's had resource guarding with your other dog. When did the resource guarding with you guys happen?
The bite?
Yeah.
The bite? Huh. I'm going to say he was almost a year, or actually he was probably, right around a year, because he was born in July. So this is like a year later in July. And he found a stale bagel at our friend's house. Mm. And to grab it thinking like it was something all right to give back to the friend's daughter. And I reached in, I got the bagel. And as I pulled out, he got a hold of my hand and definitely gave me a good little puncture wound.
Okay, so at a year, he started resource guarding with you guys, but at 8 weeks, he was resource guarding immediately with your other dog?
Yes.
He did with the other dog. I feel like, you know, when he was a baby, not that it was ever cute because he has a friend who is a dog trainer. He does field hunting or field trials, whatever they're called. Mm-hmm. And so we started working with Cody with him a little bit, and he was like, you just have to nip that in the butt. And he thought that it was more of an obedience thing than it was a like really innate guarding issue. But he, when he poisoned stuff, he would definitely show his teeth and snarl at us. But as a baby, it wasn't like as big a deal. So I think he was guarding with us too from the beginning.
Yeah, I think, yeah, because I got the one bite on my hand I've shown Callie before. Nice little scar. And on my other hand, I have these like little puppy fang scars. And I think it was from him like throwing a little tantrum. Yeah. They've had it in the backyard, and you go to get it, and I've been thinking, and he like has a little tantrum and freaks out and bites it with those puppy teeth.
Yeah.
I can't exactly remember, but I definitely remember him having a little like tantrums like that.
The other thing are that he, this summer, we swim him a lot with a buoy, and he got swimmer's tail, and we had to actually lock him in the kitchen because we couldn't even get near him because he was really aggressive.
Yeah.
With all the pain, he got aggressive because of the pain.
Mm-hmm. And that fizzled out within like 24 hours. And then we had another incident, like the beginning of September, where he got a stick stuck across the roof of his mouth. And we actually were able to tie him up to like a fence post. And then ended up having to call animal control because we thought if we could just kind of tackle him and keep his eyes closed and then use something to get it out from the roof of his mouth, that we could do it. And then animal control saw how crazy aggressive he was and then got a dog crate. And then they called the police and it became a thing. And they were going to try to force him into a crate so we could put it in the back of the truck to bring him to the
vet.
Vet, because it was on a Sunday, so our vet wasn't open, so we were going to have to go up to the ER. We're going to train him and get it out, but they just happened to be able, he was kind of luring him in with this stick that he was like attacking as he was going into the crate, and it popped the stick out. But it took Cody 4 days like to come down from that. And he's back to normal crazy. But like serious PTSD.
Yeah, he didn't trust us at all for 4 days. Just had to slowly gain it back. It was heartbreaking.
It was heartbreaking.
And like even that night, he was in the crate. We left food and treats outside, and he wouldn't even come get them. Like we'll say 4 hours later, he started coming out, and we had like biblical rain that night, and he still wouldn't do anything. He was just getting drenched outside, so it was really bad. And we did somehow. I got like a line tied to that other line, so we were able to put. Kitchen, so he didn't have to be outside in the rain all night, and we just left the door to the back door open, and he was tied up on the deck. But just doing that, like he'd come trying to sneak around to get that rope, and he was so protective and freaked out, he's trying to attack me. Like I don't think I've ever seen a dog be so aggressive.
But and just to say, like that is in him, and he has a switch where like in a minute it's like up, he's guarding the corner in the kitchen, we just redirect him, and like we've just managed it. But he is 90% a really good dog. He just has like this thing that we have to figure out how do we help him? Because we don't know what to do, you know? But he is 90% a really good dog.
Yeah. What does your breeder say about this?
Well, we haven't reached out to the breeder at all.
Okay.
Definitely returned to the situation.
Yeah.
He thinks he likes his Chesapeake, super stubborn and all that. I, you know, breed hunting dogs, and we were really turned off by the whole thing.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I would say, from my experience, judging by what you've said, it's a lot of genetics more than anything that you're dealing with. So, what that means is, let's say you get a person, a friend, a family member, a colleague, whatever. And all of a sudden you can just tell they like snap or they can't take a joke or they're very sensitive or whatever. You would just say, oh, that's just how they are. You can't really play around with that person because you know, there's certain buddies that you can mess around with, or even kids and stuff as you guys grow into that. And so I'm just explaining that, like, in human form, that's what that's like for genetics, is they just can't, they don't have that ability to take that joke. They don't have that ability to flip a switch. They go to the extreme. And that, my point is that's who they are, right? So it's not like, hey man, I was just kidding, you don't have to cry, or hey man, you don't have to punch me in the face, or hey man, like, they don't have that ability to waive that right of, oh, it's humor, right? Because that's their personality. And you would just think in your head, oh, that's just Joe, or that's just Jess, that's how they are. And that's the same thing with dogs, as you would say, that's just how Cody is. Like, you can't, and what that is, what that means to you guys is genetics. That's how they were born. That's how his genetics are. So I don't think that what you were saying, and I don't know how much you care about this or what it warrants, but in my opinion, an 8-week-old puppy going to steal another dog's food aggressively at that age is not an obedience thing, because they don't have enough knowledge of obedience to counter that. That's an actual, that is more in, like, when you get a puppy that's doing something at 8 weeks, it's very primal. It's very instinctual. They actually weren't taught that at all. And we can't blame it on obedience because they don't know anything yet. So that means you have the most rawest form of a pet dog you possibly can. It's clean slate. You know nothing. Nobody knows anything about you. This is how you behave. Has nothing to do with their obedience. That's actually their genetics straight from the core. So
from his mother so early.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it could be numerous things. I just think, okay, good point. So we could say, because of the resource guarding with food, it certainly could have been the puppy was born with great genetics and the breeder decided to withhold food, make him fight for food, whatever. And that could be still an ingredient into this recipe. However, you're seeing it with other things, it sounds like. You're seeing this very, like, aggressive behavior outside. Because this is just me personally, and you could take this with a grain of salt, because obviously, you know, I've been working with dogs since I was in diapers, so, it is what it is. But I would feel comfortable with any of my personal dogs opening their mouth like this and taking something out. You know what I mean? You guys can't do that. And so I'm just balancing between a little bit of both of, like, was this dog born like this, or did this breeder with the bagel and the food say, hey, you don't have enough food, or you have to fight for your food? Or some breeders, what they do, and especially hunting breeders, and I don't know what, hunting breeders have a bad rap, some of them, because they're so old school and they have this mentality of an old school way. And I've met really great hunting breeders that are more ethical than show line breeders. And so it's not really a blame of hunting breeders. They just have a tendency to, like, it's easy to pinpoint and blame, to say, oh, they're just whatever, they don't care. You know, the dog's not going to live in the house, they just need to go get birds and bring them back or whatever. But my point is when you have such an, like, you guys are afraid of the dog in certain situations, that to me is more genetics than it is like sculpting disposition in the beginning. Meaning, did the breeder make them fight for their food, or just scatter feed the puppies and fend for themselves? Who knows? But at the end of the day, you guys should feel comfortable enough to pretty much do anything with your dog and say, hey, I know that this is uncomfortable, and I know that you don't like this, but you're going to get a bath, and we need to get this out of your mouth. But that's not really the case. So you're seeing it in a couple different ways, not just with food. Because resource guarding with food is definitely something that could have happened in the beginning. Maybe they took the puppies away from mom way too early and the dog didn't get food or had to fight for who knows. But you're still seeing it in other places. It's not just the disposition of the food. It's, you guys even said, like, we've never seen a dog so aggressive, and you're afraid of the dog in certain situations.
Yeah.
He just picked up a pen before. We're just doing a little work. Took a pen off the couch and then goes and lays down protective of that pen. That becomes super valuable to him.
Yeah.
And told him, like, okay, redirect. We're going to go outside. Let's go do something outside. Because if I went for that pen or grabbed him, he's going to grab me and bite.
Yeah.
It could be a paper towel, pen, a kid's toy, you know, all different things. It's random with him with that.
Yep. Assuming you guys are consulting with me because you want to know the best route of action, right?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Just, I mean, open to everything.
I've been talking with Alyssa a little bit, and we were going to try to come up to one of your seminars, either the private one or the one where there's a working spot.
Mm-hmm.
But like, we get him neutered, and Alyssa did send me YouTube on how to get them
muzzled.
Conditioned for, yeah, but I'm like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think this is okay. So my first initial reaction is, you guys have to, I think the biggest option and the biggest discussion you'll have to have between you guys separately is if you want to keep the dog or not. I think that's the first option, just because of the kids. You have to be, no, so because again, being a dad myself, having young ones, and being an expert, I have a great you know, opportunity to know where you guys are coming from and have empathy for what you guys are dealing with. And when you have a dog that has a genetic disposition to be aggressive over objects that actually aren't of value to a dog, they're choosing of value, which typically means in my experience that the dog just has a tendency to possess things and likes to fight for them. It's not actually a meaty bone or a bagel or so you just have to be mindful of that moving forward with young ones, because at any point in time the dog can say, this is now mine, and the kid walks by or whatever. So I know for a fact you guys are obviously thinking of these things and you're mindful of these things. I'm just telling you what the roadmap could be because of the unvaluable random things that the dog is going to start, like the pen thing, that can easily turn into, you know, a stuffed toy or a shoe or and sometimes you might not, because you have so much going on, especially with young kids, you might not even realize what's happening before it happens, where you get nailed and you're like, my dog bit me out of nowhere, but they were laying on the remote or something. That's the first thing I'll say. What you guys need to do, plan of action, regardless of what road you go down, especially if you decide to, okay, yeah, no, we need to exhaust all avenues here with this dog because we love him, and I get that, and it's a tough situation to be in. And you'll have to do, so when we talk about specific training for dogs, this is one of those, you really need a professional to guide you through this. And or you need to, so the board and train program would be a good option after the fact of the dog getting some serious training in with you guys there. Because as trainers, we have to think of the liability we have with a dog like this. As you know, it's your own dog in your backyard and the police had to come to get it into a crate. You know, so from a training just to be efficient here with like the protocols, from a training standpoint, like what we would say is exactly what Alyssa told you. You'll have to muzzle condition your dog before we do any training, because it's not worth us getting ripped apart to do this with this dog. So that's the first plan of action, is if you guys are going to go forward with training with the dog seriously and exhausting all options, that's the first thing you'd have to do is muzzle conditioning. And it's this double-edged sword, because in order to muzzle condition, you essentially have to put the muzzle on the dog and it's something they don't like, which in your case, Cody is going to fight you likely. But then again, double-edged sword. Alternatively, you would do everything you can to entice the dog to come into the muzzle, but then you could trigger resource guarding, right? So you put cream cheese and peanut butter and whatever at the end of the muzzle. Then they're like, oh, I'll put my head in here. Now you're potentially dealing with the resource guarding. So it's this very challenging thing from all aspects of training. And the serious resource guarding like you guys are dealing with, and I know you've had some serious situations, but I can't really say, judging by the videos that you've sent me, exactly how serious it is, because you haven't really gone through the patient, because the videos that you sent me, he seems almost lethargic. He's like, he's picking up rocks and stuff, but I didn't see anything like where he's sitting there baring teeth and he's
thing is it's very strange. It's hard to explain because mm-hmm. like even grabs, he'll go in the other room and grab my sock because he's like, oh, I can get it. He brings it out here and we're like, Cody, that's not for immediately knows. It's almost like, I don't really want to have the sock. And mm-hmm. then you just go outside and he usually just leaves it. So it's not, and then he's fine. Like he shakes it off. So it's not like,
yeah,
all the time over everything. It's weird. So I think that, you know, even food, he can take treats out of our hand. I can put treats on the floor, tell him to stay. He'll stay and not grab it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, so here's the game plan for you is to take your time to, so what you should do is really take your time to start the muzzle conditioning process with high value food, if you feel comfortable doing it and what that looks like. So here's the roadmap that I typically follow with things like this is you can't hit it head on. You can't say, let's get him. It's not like something like the dog pulling on the leash. You're like, okay, let's bring the dog out on a leash. They're going to pull. We're going to teach him not to pull, right? We're going to whatever. That's, you can't really do that with this situation because then you're quite literally fighting with the dog and trying not to get bit. So what you do is you have to, like anything else in life, doesn't matter if you're practicing for soccer or war, you have to practice for the real thing. And in order to do that, you have to say, here's how to pass the ball. Here's how to whatever. Like you have to learn each individual thing. So that way, when the opportunity comes, you are prepared to dismantle the situation, just like with training, right? It doesn't matter what kind of training, if it's martial arts or it's law enforcement, you're training every little aspect until, you know, if it happens, you know what to do, right? If you're a paramedic, if you're a nurse, if you're a doctor, if you're a dentist, it doesn't matter. You're taking individual granule steps, learning each individual steps. And then when it actually is time to X, you know how to do it. And so that's kind of how you would do resource guarding. Successfully anyway, that's how I've done it. And so you start off with, okay, what's the worst case scenario for resource guarding is the dangers of getting bit because the dog like turns red, loses their mind, and they're not in the right state of mind, right? They just see red. And that is part to genetics. They almost go to this dark place and then you'll see them snap out of it. And they're almost looking around like, where did I just go? You know? It's kind of have like, they have these intrusive thoughts, but they have actions behind them. They actually do it, right? And so until they snap out of it and they go, whoa, that's just, so what you have to do is you have to do the muzzle conditioning is the best route. And I'm going to give you the best case scenarios. You guys can pick and choose what you think is realistic and applicable to you and your comfortability. But the best case scenario is, so in the morning when the dog's hungry or in the evening when the dog is hungry, you would just start setting the scenario up by putting like high reward foods in your lap. And then you would just say, Cody, come. And then you'd pay him like a piece of beef liver. Cody, come, pay him a piece of beef liver. Just little tiny pieces. You're not giving him chunks. You're not trying to overweight the dog. You're just, or even kibble, whatever you guys feel comfortable with. You want to start setting the training scenario up to, so you're going to start training the scenario up to then put the muzzle on. But at the beginning, it's going to be, Cody, come, payment, break. He just kind of walks away. And if he sits there and he's like, what else you got? You just really calmly, good. And you could even start marking it. Muzzle, boom. Muzzle, boom. And what you do is you take the piece of food and his head is here. So let's say it doesn't matter the distance. Let's say it's 6 inches away. His head's here. You take the piece of food and you go muzzle and he chases the food and you pay him. Muzzle and you pay him. Then once he gets you...
Not the muzzle.
Say it again.
It's just food, not the muzzle.
Yeah, in the beginning, yeah. Okay. So you take the food, and then you say muzzle, and then the dog goes to get the. Basically, you're creating the same reflex of the dog chasing the or going into something to get the food. So you, again, you take the food, it doesn't matter if it's kibble or treat, and the dog's head's here, and you just say, muzzle, boom, and he gets it. Muzzle, boom. And he's like, okay, what? I don't even know what this means. But you're basically taking the food, and he goes and grabs the food. He's putting his head towards your food. And then what you do, so you get that reflex. Chase the food. Then what you do is you start with the muzzle, which we typically use like Baskerville muzzles, because the dog can easily pant, drink, and accept food in the muzzle. It's not bite proof, but it's definitely devastating bite proof for sure.
What do you recommend size on that?
For a Chesapeake, I would say a 4, but I would just, it depends on what your local place has, but you can just go on Chewy or Amazon and order 2 or 3 sizes. And
okay. He's only a 70 pound Chesapeake.
Yeah, I would say a 4 would probably be, 4 is typically the go-to for like medium dogs. But yeah, I would order a 4 and a 5.
Okay.
Get them on Amazon, they'll be here tomorrow. You can kind of look at them and know. But essentially what you're doing is, then what you do, and the reason you do this in the morning or at night is when he's hungry, he's going to be more motivated. But in my experience with labs, they'll do it anytime because they're always hungry. But basically what you do is you kind of create this situation where you sit down, you call him over, and you say muzzle, and he hits the food. Muzzle, and he hits the food. And all he's doing is he's just leaning over maybe your lap or whatever with the food to get the food. And then you offer the muzzle out. So you take the muzzle out and you make it more obvious that you basically will, and you can do this in so many different ways creatively, but the easiest way is if you're using a piece of food, like if you use something, and to be mindful of a dog with a history of resource guarding, if you're using something like cream cheese, peanut butter, or silly string or something like that, because the best case scenario is you use like the silly, not silly string, but the string cheese and the spray can a lot of people use, or even Kong makes a aerosol. It's probably not the best thing for your dog, but it is what it is. Anything with a can and aerosol is probably not great for you, but it tastes good to them, you know? So, but that would be the best thing, is because basically you can use the same exact delivery to the dog without the muzzle. So you're basically painting them a really clear picture, and then you're just applying the muzzle. So then you take the muzzle, you put whatever you're going to use. If you're just going to take a piece of treat or the string cheese or whatever, and you just, or even cheese sticks you could do, because you can, or even like a long, like pepperoni sticks that they use for treats, not a bully stick because they don't chew on it. And then basically all you're doing is you're sticking that in, and the dog puts their mouth into the muzzle, and you're doing the same thing. Your muzzle, boom, muzzle, boom, muzzle, boom. And the goal is to, because obviously the dog is sensitive, clearly, and you guys are being cautious of not trying to freak the dog out. And basically to build confidence in any dog is to do something over and over and over again with absolutely zero negative side effects to the dog. Just 100 times, every single time you say muzzle and he sticks his head in that muzzle, he gets the best thing in the world. And you do that 100 times. And then eventually what you start doing is you start petting him. So you'll go muzzle, and then you'll just pet his like right between in his ears. Just start touching that right between it. And you can go at your dog's pace. Meaning if you get a dog that's like slamming his head into the muzzle and they don't give a shit if you're stabbing them with a fork in their ear, they're still going for the food. You could do it probably the third time. If you have a sensitive dog and it takes 5 minutes for them to put their head in the muzzle and they're eyeing you and they're looking at you and they're backing out of the muzzle really quick and they're super suspicious, you obviously have to do it 200 times until you can start doing anything else. But you go at your dog's pace, and essentially once the dog puts their head in the muzzle, you would then start petting their, basically touching the back of their ears, because that's where the muzzle is going to clip. You start touching the back of their ears. And then eventually what you'll do is you'll just take the straps and you'll touch them, and then you'll release them. And you touch them, good, good, and you'll touch them and release them. And at that point, if you are using something like peanut butter or cream cheese or something else, it would be better because they can work on it. Now, to be mindful of, you're not putting a half a jar on there. You're just doing a little slab, and they lick it out. They lick it out. They lick it out. And you do that when you're conditioning. You're holding the muzzle, slap, lick, lick, lick. Slap, like, and you're just getting used to them working that out. That way, when you actually go to strap the muzzle on, you do 1, 2, 3 slabs, and you kind of make it more sloppy, and then you can put it on, Good. And then you basically are just starting to feed the dog with it strapped. In a perfect world, what happens is 50 times within a month, 2 weeks, depending, the more you do it, the better it's going to get. It's like working out. It's like, hey, if I worked out 5 times a week, you're going to see more results faster than if you did it once a week, period. It's just that simple. So the more you do it, you sit down pretty much in the same place and he's sitting there licking his chops and he's ready for it. And you say, muzzle, boom, he punches his nose in there and you pay him. And again, some dogs who are food driven, it'll take a day. Other dogs that are like super suspicious and maybe not, you know, you said with the rain and stuff, it might take you longer. That's the perfect scenario, because once you call up a trainer, us or anybody else, and you say, hey, I have these situations and my dog is muzzle conditioned, what I would do is I would say, okay, start working on the muzzle conditioning. Then you'd have to start working on the basic obedience, then moving to advanced obedience so we can do remote collar conditioning. Because once you have remote collar conditioning in properly, because everyone was, oh, we do the e-collar, but you have to do it in a way that aligns with our training protocols, which essentially means we're introducing the remote collar in a very subtle, positive reinforcement-based way. So the dog looks at the remote collar as an extension of you, not a piece of equipment that punishes them if they don't listen. That's in the very beginning conditioning stages. So eventually what you're doing is you're conditioning the muzzle in one training aspect, which you can do at any time in the day. And then outside of that, you're also working on the basic obedience, which would be sending the dog away to a place, recalling the dog, sit, and probably heel. And yeah, so it'd be so pretty much like the three or four basic behaviors that dog should have.
Okay.
And then what you do is you start saying, okay, yep, my obedient. And this is something that any trainer or anybody you guys could do at home. But what we're doing, guys, is we're setting up the structure and bones to be able to then apply remote collar training. So that means we can communicate and talk to our dog wirelessly, which is what you guys will. Nobody needs it, but nobody also needs a cell phone. But man, it makes life easier, right? So.
I have three questions.
Yes.
One is, Alyssa had mentioned that you have like a basic obedience. Would you recommend that we go through that? Whatever it is, like a program or something like that. And then the second is, we do have an e-collar.
I was just going to say this, it's an e-collar.
But where is it from? Do you remember?
I got it from Gun Dog Supply. I could go grab it right now. Anyways, we purposely haven't used it because we want to do it the right way. We don't want him to have some traumatic experience with it and be completely scarred forever.
Good.
So, just like you were saying, he's a super sensitive dog.
Yeah.
He's very sensitive. Like, but sensitive in like a... Yeah.
And he's a scaredy cat. He definitely gets scared of most random things. So definitely brought that up. We want to do it the right way.
But we did... This one woman that we were working... We did have a session with her.
Mm-hmm.
She was busy, so she sent us to her friend who was a certified behavioral dog trainer, whatever,
mm-hmm.
kind of painted the picture to her about how aggressive he was. And so this trainer came and met us at the beach, and she was with us for about 2 hours. And she was like, I have to tell you, I was expecting the worst with this dog. And she's like, from everything that I've seen, I haven't seen any sign of aggression. And so but she also said, we mentioned the e-collar to her, and her thing about not doing e-collaring was that with a dog like that, who has any tendency for aggression, was that she was like, he's behaving in a way, and if you just shut that down, eventually it's going to explode, was her kind of her caution against e-collar training.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yep. Yeah, it's very hard to for anybody to say whether or not that could happen, because it always could happen. But also, behaviorists with a clinical background, meaning they don't really handle and work and train dogs. They just look at behavior and tell you what's going on, and then typically will suggest medication, typically. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. But the only problem is there's not a lot of variables to their outcomes. They're like, this is the route you should take. And then they're like, well, because they don't handle dogs historically, like a clinical behaviorist with a PhD, they don't typically handle dogs. Their job is to observe a dog's behavior and tell you what your dog is doing. And then usually and typically the next route is for them to prescribe. There's like a traditional American doctor would, not like a naturopathic or anything like, yeah. Yeah, it would be. So
we're open.
Yeah, no, whatever. I know. I'm not trying to convince you not to do that. I'm just saying with that in mind, absolutely that is an option. But, and again, for some people, because there has to be context of what that person's idea of e-collar training is, right?
Right, sure.
Because if they don't have the context in which I am saying we have to use positive reinforcement to condition the dog on the remote collar as an extension of you with absolutely zero aversive consequences at all regarding the conditioning process of the remote collar, that person would go, how the hell would you do that? But my point is, they're not wrong. They're just so used to people picking up a remote collar, and if a dog does anything we don't like, we blast him into Mars. Which in that case, yes. So that's why it's hard, and that's why I think the dog training industry is in, there's so much like, well, political bullshit, because people don't even listen to what we're saying, right? And so with that person, again, if they were to say, I would be careful and wouldn't do e-collar training because of these things could happen, I would say, yeah, that's the case. So the e-collar has 100 different ways you can use it. You know what I mean? So it's like saying, like, you shouldn't try chicken because it's really not that good. You'd be like, well, what kind of, you know what I mean? That's how I see it. I'm like, there's literally 100 chefs within your area that can do chicken completely different than what you've had before, right? I don't know. I don't know if that makes sense. But my point is we're trying to suppress, if we're going to suppress anything, we're trying to suppress a behavior that's happening. We're not trying to suppress the actual dog in its entirety. And actually, the objective of using any type of aversive or punishment in with a dog, for the most part, is to discourage a behavior from happening. We're not trying to pour a bunch of punishment over something so that way it basically just makes this really, 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 really big frustrated dog, and then it explodes. Every single time we told them no and corrected them with anything, they basically put it in their brain and stack it up. And then when they actually do explode, it's all those things happening at once. Could that happen? Yeah, because you're basically punishing a dog and they're getting frustrated because, and this is how that happens, to give context in my experience, the way that that happens is the training process isn't clear with the dog. So they're getting punished by something, the e-collar, that they don't know what it is. What the hell is this? Did I get stung by a bee? They're looking around and they don't know, like there's no context of your cue to the dog. So there's just so much that goes into what is to be said there. And I have a lot of empathy and professional respect for others in the field, because they have seen maybe an e-collar trainer do certain things with an e-collar, and they would tell you, don't do that. And I would be like, yeah, don't do that. But I'm not talking about traditional e-collar conditioning. I don't know. But anyway, my point is with the remote collar, what you would do in the way that we do it is to make sure that you're introducing the remote collar as an extension of you, not just a punitive measure that you have the technology to do because you're human. And now you have a computer on your hands. So that's important. So the process in which you introduce the remote collar is the difference between it working and not. And that's what we were just talking about. We're not going to slap it on, and if he doesn't listen, we nail him. That would cause him to be more frightened, to be more frustrated, to be more confused, and you would not likely get the e-collar on again because he knows what it is.
That's what we saw that with Cody. Yeah, that's why we've held off.
Good. So it'd be the kind of the same. It'd be the same thing if you did the muzzle though. Like if you just tried to slam that muzzle on and say deal with it, it'd be the same thing.
That's why we've held off too. Right way.
Yep.
He could have a better experience, and then he's definitely scarred with it.
Correct.
For the muzzle, once you get, like, what's the process after he's comfortable with you? Like, obviously, you connect the straps, and he has the muzzle on for a minute, or like, how do you set that up?
Yeah,
if he's going to have to a 3-hour seminar or whatever.
Yeah, good question. On that, we wouldn't keep the muzzle on for that long ever, unless, I don't know, we absolutely had to. But when we're muzzle, okay, it's a great question. So when we're muzzle conditioning, the objective is, like any type of training that we do with a dog, is we're just trying to extend the duration of how long they can do it for. If we're downing, if we're healing, if we're staying, etc. It's just to, how long can you do this for so we can actually use it in our real life world. So when you're introducing the remote, or I'm sorry, the muzzle, it would be for durational periods. So in the beginning, it would be 1 second, 2 second, 1 minute, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, etc. Basically just allowing him to be comfortable. It's kind of like getting into cold water, right? In the beginning, it's like, oh, I can't do this, but you can, you definitely can. And once you get you, and it, like anything else, right? It doesn't matter what it is. I'm just giving that example that you can definitely do it. Your brain in the media goes, this is uncomfortable. We have to get away from this. But eventually, like, especially with Cody, because of his sensitivity, he's going to be like, oh, okay, I get food. I have this on every day. I get used to this. So that way, once we actually go through the training process, and again, it would be muzzle conditioning, basic obedience, application of remote collar to keep people safe. That means I don't have to be near him to correct him if he does try to kill me, or he does try to go after you or your kids, God forbid. It would be the ability to correct my dog from a distance and hold them accountable, especially if he's sensitive. So, you know, I would actually object to the idea of the remote collar can make things worse. But with a really sensitive dog, if he understands the principles that the punishment is actually coming from you and not the remote collar, which is what good e-collar training is, in my opinion, is understanding that I'm just using, you know, it'd be like somebody saying, like, I don't like emails because I get bad emails. It's like, it's not the computer, it's not the emails, it's the person sending those emails. You should be timid and afraid of that person, or you should be at least understanding that that's the actual thing behind the computer, right? You shouldn't be afraid of computers because you had one bad email. It's the person that's sending it, and it's what you're doing. And so in this situation, it would be, let's say in a perfect world, muzzle conditioned, basic obedience, e-collar conditioned. That means he puts the e-collar on just like he puts the muzzle on, wagging his tail. Yay, we're going to go train. We're going to go off leash. I'm excited about this. He's wagging his tail and he's happier than a pig and shit. That's the objective of any tool. And then what we're doing is we're teaching him, for an example, in your case, it would be leave it, which means you can't have what you have, or it'd be out or drop, depending on what route we went. So he gets your sock, leave it. And the objective is to hold him accountable for not listening, to really separate his ability to, the situation that you had with a stick in the mouth is different than training, because that's just an animal being very in a bad situation. And because he's a big, strong dog that is willing to use his teeth to defend himself, that's just unfortunate for everyone around in that situation. The other things, like let's say he does possess the pen and you said, Cody, come. And he's like, and he hunkers down. He's like, I'm not coming. I want this pen. Without even moving where you're at, you'd be able to give him a correction. And that would change everything for you guys, because you don't have to get physical at all with him. He just goes, oh, shit. And what ends up happening, in my experience, is the dog know? So let's say he's never been held accountable in his life, unless you're right, literally attached to him with a leash or something like that. And he knows the only way that you can actually hold him accountable, because he's maybe being a possessive brat, is if you put a leash on him. You go get your leash, you put it on him, tell him to leave it, and you correct him, and then he freaks, you know. So my point is your whole dynamic in your relationship can change if you do this the right way, where he knows if he goes into the room and he grabs a sock and you tell him to leave it and he doesn't, there's going to be consequences, and it's consequences that you can still be sitting on the couch hanging out. He's going to just listen. That's it. That's the end of the story. Like, that's how animals are. But if you have to do this whole circus to say, give it back, and you're chasing him around the house, and you're like, get the leash, get the collar, get this, get that. He's like, psh. And then he's fighting you. He's mouthing you to put the collar on. And puppies do this all the time. Once they realize that the leash is the thing that tells them what they can and can't do, they'll start fighting the leash and shit like that. But essentially what you're going to do is you're going to go through the whole training, and you're going to be able to hold him accountable with the remote collar, which is a huge benefit. It's a safe benefit because he's the type of dog that's going to give you a hard time. And I think, again, like with having kids in the house and stuff like that, like, you know, you got to be really on top of it, and to be able to just push a button from anywhere on your property to hold him accountable if he's doing something he shouldn't be, because he is sensitive, he'll walk away from the situation likely. Could it make things worse? Absolutely. But I think that the success of that happening, of him just understanding, is all how you introduce it. Like, if you introduce it in a really crappy way and he's sensitive, he's going to fight the e-collar tooth and nail. But if you introduce it that the only time he ever gets punitive measure has nothing to do with the remote collar, it's all of you, then he'll realize that it's you guys. He's like, oh, I got to listen to mom and dad. And that's the general rule. That would be the roadmap that I would go down before you guys make, you know, any decision after that. Because in the videos that you sent, just like the other trainer said, you know, we're not looking at a killer here, but I do understand it's also like he has to be in this certain situation. But my point is if he gets something and he has his, say he has his e-collar on 30 days, you know, you take it off at night, obviously, but let's say you put it on every morning and you take it off at night for 30 days and it's been nothing but positive reinforcement conditioned and he loves seeing it come on because he knows he's going to go off leash. But then the one time he goes and grabs a blanket or a sock and you tell him to leave it and you correct him with it, that will just change the landscape and how he interacts with you. And he also, like, it might nip it in the bud, because I find that a lot of resource guarding happens because it's kind of like this, you get in this perpetual like spot downward spiral where you're like, what are we going to do? Do we call animal control? What? How do we get the stick out? How do we get the sock out? Do we chase him around? Do we try to barter with them? Do we yell at them? Like, it's this very anxious thing. And I think you just say, leave it, because again, I might've skipped this step, but I didn't mean to. We're teaching him the leave it and the out command, having a lot of fun with him doing that outside of the context of him actually having these things. So my point is we're not teaching him leave it when he has a sock. We're teaching him leave it when we give him something else, and then we teach him to leave it. And then that way, when he actually has something, you know, and that's how we would do it, is like, to give you a real clear example, we'd scatter feed a bunch of beef liver on the floor. We'd walk over to the beef liver and he'd go whoop, he'd go right to it, and we would say leave it. And we'd start holding him accountable for saying leave it. So when we said, hey, you can't have that, and he's like, bullshit, it's beef liver, it's mine, and we correct him for it, that's where a professional comes in, because there's a very small chance that he could redirect and have a fit and try to hurt you. I doubt that that's going to happen. He'll probably put his ears back and go, oh, shit, that was uncomfortable. And you say, yeah, it was. You have to listen to me. And that's where things start to change for your relationship for the better, where he knows that there's actual accountability, especially if you have, like you said, the dog is 95% perfect. There's this 5% times where he gets these situations where we don't really know what to do, and it's very sticky, and we really are helpless because we don't want to get bit. So these are the situations that you would use your advanced obedience influenced by the remote collar to either counter condition with, he sees a bagel, he gets a bagel. Cody, out. He spits it out. Come, stay. You go over, you pick the bagel up. You're not fighting with him. You're not saying out and you're putting your hand right in front of his face and taking the bagel away from him. You're countering with, you're basically dismantling his resource guarding with basic and advanced obedience on and off leash. And then if you do get into a situation where he is possessing something and being very aggressive, you can safely correct the dog because you couldn't go get a, you're a prisoner. You're a prisoner. You can't go get a leash and put it on him because he's going to think you're taking that, right? So your ability to correct him, but furthermore, in my experience with dogs, and I think just in human behavior as well, is once you're able to correct him without having any, from the other side of the room, everything changes.
Yeah, I think, I do think that I feel like there is a big piece in there of that. Like, I think he's a brat and he's gotten away with a lot of things.
Yeah.
And now that's my default because I know when I'm in this space, you're not going to touch me, you know?
Mm-hmm. And he almost knows when to throw that mask on where he's like, all I have to do is growl and show my teeth and everyone runs away. It's like the boogeyman.
Like the video.
He started humping her again recently, just the hormones raging. And it's like, okay, I've had it. I've had, Dakota, you go in timeout. And you like go to grab his collar, and he just digs in, puts his ass down. And if you're going to pull him, he's going to be freaking mean. So it's like, that's, he just, he knows I'm not going in the timeout right now.
Yeah.
But if I do this, I'll be alone.
The video that was us on the couch, he's, that's what I mean. It's like his temperament is confusing because he's actually being mean and he's upside down so you can't really see it. He's showing his teeth to me, but I know because we know his behavior, he's not like, if I pushed him he could bite.
Mm-hmm.
But no bite, and he's like, I'm gonna lick you but I want to bite, and he'll even bite my hand like this. He'll bite it like aggressively. Yep. But not bear down.
Yeah, I'm trying to find, I don't think I have that video. Did you sent that to me? Do you know what number? It probably was.
It should have been the first one.
Was it?
Yeah.
Video one is on a walk. Hold on, let me see. Because the only.
Are there four there?
Yeah, I think. Hold on. So, what he does in the rock in the backyard, rock while on a walk, possessive on the couch. That one's not coming up. Being possessive on the couch. It looks like you tried to like put him in a link. And hold on, let me see if I can pull this up. I think it's this one. But yes, that's kind of my point is I found it. But you physically have to, like right now, he's basically, so again, it could be genetics. It could be, I've gotten away with so much shit. What are you going to do about make me? Could be a blend. But at the end of the day, like, your ability to say, I don't care what you think, and especially with an intact, we'll say working dog, you know, at best, that in my experience working with mainly pet owners, typically you either have one or the other. You're either going to have a pet or you're going to have a working dog. Sometimes you can absolutely possible have a blend of both. It's not as common as people would like, but typically if you're actually going to get a working dog and want them to go out and hunt and chase and kill and grab and work and be this intact, pushy, ballsy dog, a lot of times, unless you're very experienced, having them as family pets don't work out. I see this all.
Or that was really good. He was, and he had all these crazy props. We had to like catheterize him daily because he had reflexed it. He was an amazing atypical Chesapeake, but he was
an amazing family dog, and he was like relentless retreating for you.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Sometimes you can do it. It's just not as common as you would think. But
I got you.
But you know, I see this a lot with like the herding breeds. Like people, a lot of pet owners will A lot of pet owners will get these, you know, Australian Shepherds or these Border Collies, and they're just, because the general public are like, I'm getting a Border Collie, or I'm getting a German Shepherd, or even a lab. Like, okay, is it a field lab? Is it a pet lab? Because there's a big difference. And to most dog owners, they're like, what? There is? You know, they don't realize the different strains, if you will, the different genetics, the different flavors, if you will. It's like, these dogs are actually like a field golden or a field lab the only similarities they have with like a pet lab or a pet golden is just how they look. Other than that, they might as well be tomatoes and onions. They're so different. So anyway, with, you know, with the time we have, I think that would be the best route for you guys. Cause with resource guarding, you guys, it's one of the only things, and I talk about this openly, commonly, it's one of the only things I can't really tell you exactly what's going to happen because it's resource guarding can be so variable. If there's so much swing in it, it's like, oh no, this dog actually has really bad genetic malfunctions with resource guarding, and this is dangerous for really any human to be living with, unless they're just going to live in a kennel outside for the rest of their life, which they may be happier in, to be honest. Or, no, your dog got away with everything as a puppy. You kept the working dog intact, and now they're running your house, and this is what you're dealing with. So that's the roadmap that I would suggest for you guys. What questions do you have?
We do want him to be neutered. Yeah, so that's a whole nother thing, right? Like being able to hands
after
off.
After seeing them with the swimmer's tail, and then I had that accident, it was... We had a schedule for neutering, and then I had my accident. They're like, Callie, you got too much on your plate with a baby. Me, you know, really busted up, just got out of the hospital. And then we weren't even really thinking of the pain with him, but it's like, yeah, holy shit, after swimmer's tail, what happens when they make some incisions? First, like, just that experience going to the vets, this and that, but just when he's home, recovering.
Yeah.
How's that going
to be? We just have a lot of work for sure with him. And a lot of like conditioning, even going into the vet now, it's like going to be a thing when it never was. But when he's in a muzzle, like say when we get him up to that 5 or 10 minutes, what should we be doing with him during that time?
I'd just be paying him, just like incrementally holding. I'd have him on a leash and not letting him, you know, run away to get into a weird situation. Just have him on the leash and just. Verbally rewarding him. Good muzzle payment. Good muzzle. Just really making it positive.
We try to go for a walk with him.
You could, once he gets comfortable enough to be like, I don't even feel it's there, then yeah. Yeah, definitely. Because the goal is to say muzzle and then boop, he puts it on and then you can do anything you want with him. But in the beginning, it's going to be a lot slower than that. And then, yeah, it would be, you'd just be careful. Maybe, you know, there's you just have to go in steps. So you go outside with them, you take it off, and then you finish your walk. You come back, and then you do it again the next day. You go outside with them, you walk 10 feet, you take it off, and then you finish your walk. You come back the next day, you go outside with them, take them for a walk, 30, you know, you just incrementally say, hey, this is part of our lives. And, when it's on, the goal is to, it'd be like putting like, you know, my son just turned 2. And he's now getting comfortable with hats. It's almost like it takes a full year for him to go. It's not even there. And it's not important. It's just one of those things. Like in the beginning, once you put it on, they're like, what is this? And they just rip it off. It's kind of the same thing with muzzles with dogs. But once you put it on, you know, enough, then they're like, I don't really care about this thing anymore. So the idea is to put it on enough where he doesn't even see it and he doesn't care about it. And also all the good things happen when it's on.
Okay.
So I would just be incrementally going out and paying him. And you're looking for engagement. You're looking for him to look at you, pay, walk, look, pay. And you're paying him for keeping the muzzle on without fighting it off. And that's the objective, is to build the duration out further and further every step, every second of the way. Every second that he has the muzzle on and you're doing anything with him is a W. And then again, eventually, he will learn to keep it on for longer periods of time and absolutely have no issues with putting it on and leaving it on. Then when you guys actually start training, what you said earlier about keeping the muzzle on for like, you know, 3 hours or something, we would only put the muzzle on in situations where the resource guarding could get potentially dangerous. And so the muzzle in training may be on for... In what I do, like 3 minutes. So I would just say, okay, now we're going to take it. Like I would gauge the dog, look at the dog. Cause all of dog training is very, I call it art form, you know, like anything else. You're like, oh, we need a touch of salt, touch of cumin, touch it. You're just kind of like tasting it and being like, this is what it needs. When I'm looking at a dog and I'm working with a dog, it's more on like, there is no binary. It's not like that. It's not like each step is going to be mandatory. It's like, yeah, we're going to switch gears. But when I'm ready to put the dog into a situation that could be dangerous for me, then we, and the dog has no idea it's coming. So it might be, let's say we do leave it's on food, and then I go in and actually try to take a piece of food from the dog as he's eating it, and we work on leave it that situation, and that's where the muzzle comes in. And it would only be for that exercise. And if they rock it, yay, we walk away, the dog's tail's wagging, good job, Cody. We take the muzzle off and we do it again in an hour. And so you're just kind of building up to the point of that. And then that's really the only way you can tell this is really working, and when you are seeing possessiveness, you have the ability to shut it off like pretty much immediately. Because even if you had like a good place, like let's say he got like a sock and you got the kids and things are going on and you're like, I don't have time for this, Cody place, and he doesn't, you can use the remote collar to send him to his place and deal with the sock later. But at least he's not going to move from his place, because your place is good, your stay is good, and you have the ability to hold him accountable from that. I mean, trust me, my e-collar, especially with Burley, my air quotes puppy, it's on my belt all the time with the baby, because now we have a 2-year-old and now we have a newborn as well. So I hear you. It's like that thing is a lifesaver, because I can have my baby, my newborn in my hand, burping him, as my son is getting ready to go outside, and my air quotes puppy, I say this because he's 10 months and he's probably 120 pounds, sees the door open and he's like, wadu, wadu, and he's running towards the door, and I can see my son going flying in the air. I can down him on the way there and he'll go, arr! And if he doesn't, I can use the remote collar. So the remote collar is just a huge benefit for anybody that pretty much wants to advance their obedience off leash, okay. Especially when somebody else's, you know, somebody could get hurt if they, and it could be as simple as my dog being huge and bumping my son off the wall because he's big. He had absolutely zero ill intent. Or it could be potentially what you guys are dealing with, where it's the opposite of that.
Okay. All right.
So it's a lot, but that would be the roadmap that I would take with you guys to begin. And then once that consulting is over, then you'll have a really good understanding of where you need, what direction you need to go.
This is not resource guarding, not aggression, but just a quick question. Mm-hmm. Your newborn son and Burley, mm-hmm. does he lick your son or your 2-year-old like religiously, constantly?
Relentlessly.
No, he doesn't. And we wouldn't let him if he did. Every now and then, like, we want to encourage him to be friendly and get to know the kids. But no, he doesn't like habitually do any of that.
See, Cody does it, and we want him to be nice, but it's like, no, like, that, enough. Yeah. I know.
Yeah. I'm not going to act like I know exactly why dogs would do that, but dogs are like, you know, they do that to puppies, it's like, shit, is Cody going to get possessive with the baby? You know, I was like, this is my baby now. Who knows? But my point is you should be able to, with or without the remote collar, be able to say, Cody, go to your bed and stay. Get away from here. So just sending him away is just, I just, like, the send away place is my top 3 behaviors outside of heal and come back, maybe. Is like, you can do anything with that. Like, you can manage pretty much any scenario with that, because it doesn't matter if you're cooking dinner or you're, dog is relentlessly, like Burley again, he literally is like a rhino walking around our house. He's constantly unintentionally in our way and under our feet. And sometimes obviously we don't care, but other times we're like trying to do something. And I can just say, go to your bed. He doesn't want to, but he trots over to his bed and lays down. And that's like a really important command to have, especially with a younger dog that's, you know, it's different when you get an older dog that just like wants to go lay in the sun and chill, because then it's not, they're on their own time. But when you get a younger active dog, it doesn't really matter how young they are, even if they're just in your face or in your baby's face, you just need to be able to say, you can't just say, you could say leave it, but they're just going to sit there and wait for something to happen. You can actually send your dog away, which is helpful. But okay,
we're done. I just have, do you think that getting, you can't tell, but do you think, like, as far as him being in pain, all this will just help it, but like, getting the stick out from the roof of his mouth, I try to just sweep the roof of his mouth now, just kind of like to get them to it, but that maybe he builds trust with us could potentially be a little better, maybe.
Yeah.
Something like that.
The more you touch him and the more you make it him positive. Come, yeah, the more you practice doing anything with them, when you actually need to do something with them, it'll be like, oh, we've done this 100 times. But again, like a stick stuck to his mouth, it's going to be different when it's actually there. But yeah, I mean, doing it more than not is going to be better for him when it actually happens.
Okay, cool. So we'll just start working on the muzzle conditioning and basic obedience. And then once we get the muzzle conditioning, then potentially come to some in-person stuff.
That's what I would suggest, yeah.
No, I definitely would like that.
Yeah, those are the proper steps to take if you want to do it sustainably and do it the right way. I'm sure there's other ways to do it, but if you guys have time to do it, that's how I would do it.
Okay.
Yeah, we want to keep them, and we definitely want to work with them. And we also know we have a bunch to learn too, and we have to put the time in with a lot of other stuff with them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a whole thing. It's not just, again, oh, my dog pulls me on the leash. It's a lot more than that. It's your relationship. It's your training. It's your foundation. It's how your dog looks at you. It's everything. It's much more than that very granule. We have one problem. It's like, it's never that. I've never had it be that. It's always, to you, it's one symptom, but it's actually much more than that.
Cool.
Yeah. All right, guys. It was nice to meet you. Good luck with everything. And maybe we'll talk to you again in the future.
All right.
Tom, thanks for your time.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah. No problem, guys. Good luck.
Take care.
All right, bye.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at gethumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.